Thank you. This is a joint work with John Calzamiglia, Ramon Munoz Tapia, Emily Bagan from Barcelona, and Vlado Buzek, who is head of our group at Institute of Physics. When John first started to use the term scavenging in one of the versions of our paper, I didn't know what it meant. So if you're like me, what it means is exactly this. So it's trying to use something which was disposed as garbage by someone else to use it for something reasonable. And this is what we try to do with quantum states, which have been measured already. Let's start with a brief motivation. So let's imagine we have a classical macroscopic object, some macroscopic arrow, the state of which, for our purposes, is fully characterized by a vector in a three-dimensional space. As being a classical object, it has two properties. First of all, the first property is that its state can be estimated with arbitrary precision. And second, in the process of this estimation, the original state of the system is preserved. And as a consequence of this, we can have a second, third, or any number of experimentalists or observers who are able to precisely estimate the state of the system, in this case, some unit vector in 3D space. In quantum mechanics, the situation is different. Imagine we have analog of this situation. We have a single pure spin 1/2 system, which is polarized in some unknown direction. And our task is to estimate this direction, and we have only one copy of the state. So imagine we have an observer who uses a Stern-Gerlach apparatus, and since all of these directions are equiprobable, a good strategy is just to pick a random direction and use the Stern-Gerlach apparatus in this direction. If the chosen direction is perpendicular to the original one, then we have each answer or each outcome with equal probability. But in all the other cases, which happen with probability one, we have the more correct outcome with higher probability and the less correct outcome with lower probability. Now, if we were not allowed to measure, but were forced to give an estimate, the best thing we can do is just to guess. And if we only guessed, then in each direction, the better and the worse estimates would occur with the same probability. So in this sense, we have some information measuring only one copy through this randomly oriented Stern-Gerlach. We have some information about this original state. Now, imagine that this Stern-Gerlach apparatus performs a von Neumann measurement, which means that after the measurement, the state collapses to an eigenstate belonging to the measured eigenvalue. And then, of course, the post-measurement state does not, it contains information about the outcome which has been realized, but it contains no further information about the original state. So obviously for the same observer, it makes no sense to remeasure the state he has because there's no other information to extract. But imagine we have a second experimentalist who is unaware of this original state, who is unaware of the outcome and also of the orientation of the Stern-Gerlach apparatus. Then for him, he will receive on the input of his apparatus a pure spin 1/2 system, which is uniformly distributed. So he can use the same strategy as the first user. And again, he will get some estimate, which is better than random guessing, of the outcome of the measurement of the first observer, which is better than a random estimate of the original direction. So indirectly, also the second observer has, in this sense, information about the original preparation. Okay, now if we imagine we don't have just a single copy of this spin 1/2, but we have infinitely many. Then of course we recover this classical picture where any number where we can perfectly determine the state of the single copy, and any number of users or observers can do this. So, okay, this is clear, I think. But the interesting question is, what happens if we have finitely many copies of this state we want to estimate, or more generally, if we have some more clever encoding of this single copy state into a state space of n systems of the same type. When I say encoding, I mean some mapping from the state space of this single copy into a state space of n systems of the same type. And this encoding can be any you can imagine. For example, if we had one copy, we can have trivial encoding when we don't do anything, or we code into a discrete set, like half of the hemisphere of the Bloch sphere gets mapped to some point and the other hemisphere into a different point. If we had more copies, let's say two, we could prepare, okay, if we had two systems of the same type, we could encode into two copies, into anti-parallel states, some other covariant encoding, or just anything you can imagine. Okay. Okay, so the problem we have can be cast into this circuit. So imagine we have a preparer who has a classical description of a state psi, which is a pure state of a d-dimensional system. He encodes it into the n instances of the system of the same type, so n qubits, via encoding rho. This is sent to an experimentalist who performs some indirect measurement, obtaining some outcome O1. And based on this outcome, he produces some estimate Psi1 of the true state Psi. Now, because he has gained, or in general, he gains some information about the state he measures, the measured state undergoes some change due to this measurement, which is given by some transformation rule, which is conditioned on the outcome obtained. And this transformed state is then sent to observer number two, who does his own measurement and so on. We demand that the observers don't communicate between each other, so they don't tell each other, obviously, the measurement outcomes or the guesses. But also, let's say the observer number two has only partial information about what the observer number one is doing. In particular, if we had only a single spin 1/2 particle, we require that, let's say, the first experimentalist did a Stern-Gerlach measurement along some axis, then the observer number two is not allowed to know the orientation of this axis, because otherwise the whole thing is trivial, of course. Okay, so we are interested in the quality of estimates of the observer 1, 2, 3, and so on, of the true state psi. We measure this by average fidelity, which is just the fidelity between the true state and the guess state, times the probability of the joint event of the true state being psi and the guess state being psi k, and we sum up over all such events. And the fidelity is just overlap of the two states in terms of the generalized Bloch vectors for d-dimensional systems. It has this form, so these are the Bloch vectors. Okay, and what we are interested in is the maximum of these average fidelities, the maximum for the first experimentalist, for the second, the third, and so on. And the maximization is done over strategies, so over whatever the preparer can do, the observer 1, 2, until the observer of interest. We consider three scenarios, but I will only talk about the first one, which we call greedy observers, which is the one most interesting, I think. And the scenario is such that experimentalist 1 does everything he can to figure out the true state psi. So he in no way he's trying to do something good for experimentalist number two, which would decrease his own quality of estimate. So he tries as hard as he can, but of course he doesn't spoil the state unnecessarily, which is passed to the next experimentalist and so on. So how does such maximization look like? So let's say we are maximizing for the fidelity of the first experimentalist. So we maximize this average fidelity over encodings rho, then over P of EMs, the first experimentalist is doing, then over interpretation of outcomes, so he has to assign to each outcome some guess psi 1. So at the end of the first maximization, we have the value of the maximum fidelity, and we have triples of encodings, P of EMs, and these interpretations of outcomes. Now, for the second experimentalist, so for the maximization of F2, of his fidelity, we take all the strategies, so the encodings and P of EMs, which give us the maximum of the first experimentalist fidelity, and we calculate all compatible dynamics due to measurement, and then we search for optimal P of EMs and interpretation of results of the second experimentalist, and so on. So this seems to be quite complicated brute force method, but it will be simplified in a few slides. So first of all, I said we are maximizing, or we need a description of a P of EM describing a measurement, and also dynamics due to the measurement. So this mathematically is described by the notion of quantum instruments, which was introduced by Davis and Lewis in the 1970s. And what it is, it's a mapping from outcomes, or set of outcomes, to quantum operations. So for each outcome, it gives us transformation rule for the states due to the measurement process. And it also provides us with the probability of outcome, which is just trace of the post-measurement state. So the post-measurement states are normalized not to one, but to probability of the outcome being realized. As I said, the observers are required to be independent. By this, I mean precisely that they don't communicate their estimates, obviously, but also if some operation is done, from the point of view of the successive observer, all transformed operations are equally probable. So in this single spin 1/2 example, this would be exactly as I said. So the observers are allowed to know that, for example, a Stern-Gerlach has been used, but its orientation is secret. So in calculation of this average fidelity, we have to average over all the orientations of Stern-Gerlach apparatus, for instance. So this holds for all operations. G is from SUD, and the U of G is the symmetric representation G to the N. Okay, another way we can do is we can put this post-processing from outcomes to estimates to be incorporated in these P of EMs or instruments, so the outcomes we are getting can be directly labeled by the estimates. And as I said, because of this lack of knowledge or this unitary freedom in all the quantum operations which occurred before, we have to consider only covariant encodings, P of EMs, instruments or channels. So covariant is with respect to SUD and its symmetric representation, and it's defined for these objects the usual way. Okay, so reminder, we are calculating this quantity, the average fidelity, and for this we need this conditional probability that the original state was psi, and that the kth observer obtained an estimate psi k. So using all the simplifications, we can write it in this form. which is sum over all the outcomes of the intermediate estimates of the observers between 1 and k minus 1. So this is the probability for the kth observer. And here we have only covariant objects, covariant encodings row 0, covariant instruments i1 to ik minus 1, and covariant p of m, mk, of the describing the kth observer's measurement. Okay, and if we now sum up over all the outcomes, we have another relation, which is just the original state encoded, and then we have some channels, psi 1 to psi k minus 1, which are gradually adding noise to the state which the observers are trying to estimate or measure on. So this picture is relevant when we want to tell something about the two scenarios which I will not talk about, which involve weak measurements. In this greedy case, where everyone measures as hard as he can, this one will be more usable. In particular, it can be shown that if you do a most informative measurement, this probability can be written in a factorized form, where we have only this conditional probability. So outcome of ith observer or his estimate depends only on the previous observer's estimate, not on the original state directly, not on the estimates of the previous observers before the very, very next or very previous. So this conditional probability is then given by some encoding row I minus 1 of the estimate of the I minus first observer and of the P of n of the ith observer. So we can say that in the case of this greedy scenario, what the measurement apparatus do as post-measurement dynamics to the state, they encode the outcome that has been observed for the next experimentalist. So what the next experimentalist can do is only estimate the previous estimate, the previous experimentalist estimate. Okay, with this we can show that the average fidelity has this form. Remember, d is the dimension of the single system, and then delta I is a number which characterizes how well experimentalist can estimate the outcome of the I minus first experimentalist. And if we insist that, for example, the original strategy for the first observer has been optimal, then there is no way to reach better values of this delta, but of course all observers can reach the same value. And then the average fidelity has this simple form, where delta can be calculated from the average fidelity, maximum average fidelity of the first observer. So what we have done is we have reduced this multi-observer problem to the problem of a single user or single observer. Moreover, in the literature, the results for the single observer case are known, so let's look at those. So let's say we have a b-dimensional system we encode into n copies. Then the average fidelity is given by this expression. Let's just see that for a large number of copies, this scales as 1 minus d over n. Now for qubits, the optimal encoding is known. It's given in this paper. Again, for a large number of copies, we see that here it's 1 minus some constant over n squared. So this is quadratically better, the optimal encoding, than the parallel one. And now we can finally proceed to the question that interested us from the beginning, which is how large a quantum system must be to be considered classical with respect to these repeated measurements and with respect to obtaining correct estimates of the state, of the original state. So we require that for classicality in quotes, the average fidelity for any observer has to be 1, so for fixed number of copies, this never happens. But we can ask what scaling is required, what number of copies as a function of number of observers, what scaling is required to, if we go together with k and n to infinity, to get these limits to be 1. And the answer is that for the parallel encoding, it's alpha, so this exponent.